It's only entertainment.
Welcome back to the Talking Hedge. I'm Josh Kincaid, capital markets analyst and host of your cannabis business podcast. With me today, Jason Vygotsky. He's with PedalFast. Jason, thanks for being with us at the Talking Hedge.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
What is PedalFast for those who haven't heard about it? What do you do?
PedalFast is a go-to-market platform. So when you think about brands and how do you get to retailers and then ultimately touch consumers, there's different route to market strategies that exist. Obviously a distributor fits, you know, squarely into the mix there. But my background is alcohol beverage and natural food, and have been in both for a while. And PedalFast is a little bit of both of those strategies tied into one. So today we operate in California. We're launching Michigan and Massachusetts in the next, call it 4 to 6 months. And if you're a brand and you're looking for national distribution, you know, we're starting to become, you know, one of the staples of how you would do that.
When will cannabis brands actually matter? It's still like, you know, even though it seems like on the West Coast, we've been in this for a long time, there are states who haven't regulated it at all. So when people are still looking at for the highest THC at the lowest price point, that's not really branding, but eventually it becomes that as they kind of go to their more normal go-tos, or heaven forbid, they're allowed to advertise and connect that way. When will we actually see the rise of cannabis branding?
Yeah, I mean, I think the consumers wanting THC, like you just mentioned, that's a byproduct of having weak branding. You know, go talk to 710 Labs. 710 Labs gets a premium on their product versus their competition, right? And people could care less about what the THC percentage is of their products because they know what that brand stands for and what they do. So there are plenty of brands that counteract, you know, the uneducated consumer just looking for the highest percentage that they can possibly find. But brands are starting to matter now. And the reason why brands are starting to matter now is because as the industry, especially in California, Michigan, Massachusetts, are racing to the bottom, you're seeing competition pick up. And when competition picks up, your brand matters more and more. It's just not about having weed anymore, right? Everybody has weed. We can go get weed very easily in the legal market to create a brand. Who's going to differentiate themselves? Who's going to ultimately grab a consumer? And I think the most challenging thing is cannabis. It's not actually getting a consumer to try your product. It's getting the consumer to come back and take your product again and again and again, because ultimately, even me, I get more samples and I see more brands than probably anybody in California. I still go into a store and I want to try something new because it's just a new industry. It's a new thing. It's a new form factor. So I think anybody that bases education and embraces the fact that the consumer is going to want to go on a journey and want to see a path, right? The brand has to be a part of that journey, or you're going to struggle.
We just did a podcast on repeat pre-roll sales in Washington State. We love our pre-rolls out here. I wouldn't probably repeat an experience I had with two very well-known brands, Stizzy and Cookies. The Stizzy vape that I have somewhere, and the Cookies blunt that I had, terrible. So I'm assuming that's all branding and not actually product, even though I thought Burner was all about genetics and everything else. But the blunt I had was terrible. The Stizzy's vape I had was horrible. What does it take to get people to repeat? I mean, obviously, there's a whole demographic of people who look at these brands being Stizzy and Cookies, and they relate to that somehow, and they keep going back regardless of the experience. What is it though about repeat purchasing that gets people to come back?
Yeah. It's an interesting question. And you brought up two brands that are extremely successful, right? I think number one, from a branding perspective, I don't believe you're the target audience for those two products. Number two, because they're doing a lot in the culture, they're doing a lot in the fashion industry, they're doing a lot of, you know, forget about the quality of the product. They are capturing folks that are in that 21 to 24 year old age and then trying to capture them for life. But I'll tell you, it's hard as hell to keep the consistency across the country. And I'll tell you even more so, Washington might be the hardest state for consistency and quality. with just how the structure is up there. But in any event, typically in California, where Cookies is from, I mean, their product is, you know, definitely up there in quality, and they do a great job. I haven't tried it in all the different markets, but when your flour, more so than oil, right? And it's interesting that you say that about Stizzy, because flour is very difficult to scale across the country and keep it consistent. You could have the same exact grow in the same exact way, but like you do it in the desert versus doing it in Santa Barbara, it's just going to be different. And it's just hard to keep things consistency, especially with flour. Oil, you can get it there. I mean, you can really dial that in, especially if it's live resin or distillate, but keeping the consistency is extremely challenging. But those two companies, those are marketing machines, and they also have more dough than their competitors, right? So they're doing something right on the marketing side of the business, whereas it seems like they got to go back to the drawing board in the quality up there. But at the same time, I don't know if you're necessarily the target consumer.
No, I would agree with that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about was CPG. A lot of folks are coming into the industry and saying, oh, this is just a consumer product good. Like Tilray, for example, Brandon Kennedy, the previous CEO of Tilray, was kind of famous when he said that, they're a CPG company and nobody, he doesn't care about cannabis and didn't come from cannabis, and they're kind of proud of that. And yet they post stupid things like this, where they're saying that they hang dry their flower so that the lingering mineral content in the branch is drawn down to the buds by gravity and increase the cannabinoid content in the final product. They've since taken this down because they were so ridiculed about this post and how they are able to grow, when in fact, I don't think they know anything, to be quite candid with you. So when we look at CPG, is the concept, the idea that Brandon Kennedy and Tilray had just like way into the future? Because it doesn't seem like we're there yet.
No, they're not way in the future, and they're not even going to be here in the future, because Tilray is a laughingstock of the industry as far as how they go to market and how they talk about cannabis. That is a financial engineered crock of shit, and everybody in the cannabis space knows it, right? And they're trying to find a way to back into cannabis and take traditional CPG brands and morph them into cannabis. The one thing they don't realize is that the cannabis consumer has more loyalty to the tradition and the culture, right, than any other consumer that I've seen, right? And the typical consumer that those folks are used to going after in traditional CPG, right, they're not here. Okay. And the stoner sees through that shit really, really quickly. And they know it's not authentic, and they know it's all bullshit, and it does not resonate. So if you're going to go capture the CPG consumer in cannabis in the United States, right, even in Canada, right, you need to be authentic. And I don't think there's anything authentic about Tilray or some of the other Canadian companies and what they're doing in comparison to what's going on in the United States. So CPG for me is a great basis and a great way to structure your business, and those principles have worked for a long, long time. But if you don't combine that with some real knowledge of what's going on in the street and what the consumer wants, right, you're going to be this financial engineer company that gets laughed at, right? And that's what Tilray is right now. Kudos to Canopy Growth. I mean, I think they've pivoted with some of their acquisitions into combating that, right? Combating that with, they just bought Wana. They just bought a company called Jetty, right? Buying brands that can work within a real CPG structure, but have real authenticity within the space and are doing things the right way and connecting with the real consumer that everybody's after right now.
Do you have any other examples of how people are marketing authentically?
I mentioned I love the 710 Labs, right? That's the best market around quality. People know what you're getting with quality. They've also done scarcity very well from a marketing standpoint to get on their list. They make drops and it's out of stock, and whether that's on purpose or not, like they've done it right. So I think 710 Labs for me is an unbelievable brand and what they've done. we represent a brand called Yada Yada, and it's a whimsical, funny brand with a great product behind it. It is the fastest growing brand in the state of California. It is the only brand in the top 10 flower category that wasn't around even in 2021, and they're already the seventh largest brand per headset. So Yada Yada is doing something right. And then I think somebody is going to own the California Dreamin' type of brand, because I'm from Philly. So right now my boys in Philadelphia, they're just happy that there's weed on a shelf. You know what I mean? It could say shit in the bag and they're still going to be the happiest dudes that I've ever met, because they can just go buy weed, right? Well, as that changes, they're going to want to have branding and have it mean something. And I believe that there's a brand called Space Coyote that we also represent in California. When you look at the founders, you know, you're looking at long blonde hair, you're looking at like the most pretty people I've ever seen in my life. And that resonates through their brand. And I believe taking that across the country is going to resonate even more so than it is in California, in Illinois, in Pennsylvania, in Massachusetts. So if I'm an MSO, I'm scared of the California brand going across the country in reverse, because I believe the consumer, at least, you know, for me being an East Coast guy, now I live in California. When you think of cannabis, I think of like the beach and surfing and you know, weed in California and Los Angeles and San Francisco and Seattle. And I believe that brand Space Coyote really captures that feeling. And when that goes across the country to the East Coast, I think it's going to resonate very well.
Yeah, you don't see Corona up in the mountains, even though it's active and people are having a good time snowboarding, whatever. But you always kind of attribute Corona with the beach, and that's kind of who they're targeting, even with Snoop Dogg as a spokesperson.
You wouldn't desire a Corona if we just finished snowboarding. You know what I mean? You just wouldn't want that. Mm-hmm. You probably want Sierra Nevada, right? But if you're on the beach, I don't care what kind of thing you'd like to drink, that brand is going to resonate. And I think that with cannabis is what I'm talking about with that California Dreamin' type of lifestyle. Somebody's going to own that. And I think this brand Space Coyote has a great opportunity.
When I was up in Vancouver, BC, right before the pandemic, I went to a medical shop dispensary, and this, I had asked the guy what type of cultivar this weed strain was. I hadn't actually seen weed as a strain before. And I was like, is that a sativa or indica? And he's like, man, weed is weed. It's just weed. So obviously we've got some ways to go before, you know, that goes to the wayside and more towards the branding, which is going to, evoke emotion and get people to, you know, see through that brand, whether it's from the transparent, founders that are able to kind of establish the storyline behind that. You said that we're kind of there, we're ready for that. And yet Philly is just kind of wanting weed on the shelf. When as a whole are we going to see traditional marketing in the cannabis space?
A couple of things. That's a big question. I think number one, if you're going to start an alcohol beverage brand, California, Illinois, Florida, New York, Texas, right? That's where you start, and then you fill in the gaps, because those are the influencer type of states. Okay. Right now you can do it in LA and obviously California. Not really Illinois, because there's not much, it's still very monopolistic and vertical. New York is coming, you know, Florida will flip at some point. To start the playbook of traditional CPG, you need those states to open up. Okay. Because that's where all the trends are made, right? Austin, Texas, Miami, New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, right? So if you're building an alcohol beverage brand, that's where you're starting, and you're gonna fill in the gaps from there. So I think number one, we need recreational weed to be legal in those states. Okay. Number two, you don't have the playbook. I mean, building a brand is connecting with a consumer. And tugging on their emotions in some sort of way, whatever way you're trying to, you know, sway them, right? We don't have the traditional platforms. I mean, I was talking yesterday to somebody and it's like, they're like, oh yeah, what do you guys help your brands do on Instagram? I'm like, Instagram, everybody's shadow banned. Everybody's getting shut down. Like, you're not going to do anything on Instagram that is meaningful, or TikTok. You know, LinkedIn, yes, but that's more of a business type of site. So we don't have the normal playbooks. We need the ability to capture consumers and connect with them. And we just don't have the normal channels. So kudos to Cookies. Kudos to Stizzy. Jeter has done an amazing job. There's a couple of them that have broke away and have done a great job. And the one consistent thing with all of those brands, that they have been extremely well capitalized to do that. I'm interested to see when that normal playbook comes to light. And you're able to use the traditional methods, which I think will slowly happen here over the next couple of years. Then you're going to see brands being built, and you're going to see branding that and the lifestyle brands and the like.
Is Cookies developing that model right now? They've got an international platform that seems to be working more so than, I don't see it's easy to open up a storefront, but it is easier than, opening up a whole production facility, for example. Are they the future franchise model that people are looking at, or what is and what makes somebody that franchise model or international platform?
Well, there's a couple things. Number one, I personally don't believe a consumer packaged good brand and a retail brand should be the same thing. I think it causes some confusion, right? So while they have been very successful, that for me is a challenge. And you can say the same thing about Stizzy, right? Long term, it has worked today, but long term, you start to get into some challenges when you're taking a brand and you need your competitors to support it, but you're competing against them as a retailer, right? So vertical integration tends to start to knock heads as it scales. What they have done better than anybody else is the apparel. I mean, there is there's nothing that's holding anybody back from traditional playbooks and marketing and on apparel. And I don't know what they do in sales, but I got a good feeling that their apparel business is a monster, right? So the apparel business is where they're driving traffic to, and using that traditional playbook on online and digital and having those type of stores. And they've been able to bring a kind of a cult following to that culture of that, 18 to 24 year old, right? And they've done a great job, and Stizzy's in the same vein, and Jeter as well. So I think the apparel is certainly a thing to watch, right? Because you can do the normal things. And they've also done is Burner the biggest celebrity in the world? No. But he's done it very tastefully, right? And in comparison to, I don't know, Tyson 2.0, like throwing Tyson's name all over everything, is a little bit in your face to me. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think, the ear bite is a thing that really rubs me the wrong way. But they've done a great job as well. I mean, they just raised a bunch of money and they've been able to execute and they have a great team. But for me, I think Burner and what they've been able to do from a celebrity standpoint and getting in the rap songs and getting in that scene, combining it with the apparel, like, done a pretty damn good job.
What's going to be the next biggest driver for the industry? Is it going to be, either being able to cross state lines or banking, bringing in additional capital? What do you think is going to be the next big catalyst that's going to drive the industry farther?
Number one, I don't think state lines is happening anytime in the near future. There is absolutely no basis behind that other than me. However, I just don't think that's going to happen. I think we have an evolution before that happens. And all of these states want to keep as much of those tax dollars within those states. So I find it very hard to believe that is something that happens in the near future. But for me, this is the most undercapitalized space I've ever been in by far, times 10. So we need access to capital. Operators are dealing with 280E that makes it even harder to operate. We're dealing with regulation changes all over the place. If in my mind, this industry needs more capital because it's the fastest growing, it's the fastest growing industry, you know, at least in my lifetime. And we're going to need more capital in order to be succeed. So I think safe banking unlocks institutional capital. It unlocks a lot of people that are on the sidelines. That is the biggest catalyst for me in the near term that could get done. I think everybody could operate as is in the structure of state by state. But the 15 VC firms that everybody raises from in cannabis, like, that's not going to get the job done. And they've been great supporters. And my VC that has supported my three businesses is Merida Capital, and they're as good as it gets. But the 15 guys can't fund everything, you know. So safe banking for me is the biggest thing that could change the space in a big way.
What's been that shift in the capital raising environment just in the last couple of years? It's shifted quite a bit just from what I've seen. I'd like to get your point of view on it. Where is it at now, and how has it shifted?
This is the hardest climate I have ever seen for cannabis operators to raise money, especially if you're a brand. Right now, the oversupply in California is putting unbelievable pressure on brands. Whatever your pro forma said, whatever you were telling investors, whatever you raised at, you did not price in the type of flower prices that we have today in the state. Like, you just didn't. And nobody was prepared for that. I don't even know how you could prepare for what we're seeing right now. Like, so there's a lot of businesses that are just upside down. That means there's a lot of VCs that are upside down. It means they just can't go and raise more money to go deploy. Times that by the more macro scene that we're seeing in the general economy, right? And you got a really distressed space. And oh, by the way, there's only 15 VCs or 20 or whatever it may be. So it's a challenge. The other piece is the public companies have gotten smashed, right? It's sad because you look at their businesses, and I look at GTI's business and I go, why are they down so much? Their business is better than it was a year ago, and they're down by, you know, 70% or whatever it is. Like, they're spinning off profits. So right now everything is just distressed, which is really hurting the small guy, which is putting the guy with the balance sheet in a position to gobble it up or withstand this time period more so than others. And this is my second go around in this. It will turn around and there will be tailwinds again, and there'll be something, whether it's safe banking or something else, that pushes it in that direction. So what I'm telling my brands and what our company is doing, I mean, cash is king right now. You know, we are making sure that we have a very healthy balance sheet, because there's going to be a lot of opportunity in California and other states to climb up the leaderboard. But right now, if you can't raise money, you don't have access to capital, I find it very hard to believe that there's many folks that are profitable out there in this type of climate. If you can't raise, you know, you're going to have problems. So if the oversupply continues the way it is, well, it's just simple economics. I mean, the price is going to drop. People are going to go back and out of business, and then the price will start to rise again when that get clears out. So that evolution is happening right in front of our face. And I remember, like, sitting in economics class in Bucknell, being like, what the hell am I ever going to use this supply and demand stuff for? Right. And now I'm sitting here watching it, and it's interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious if some of those Philly folks out there are going to be future distressed assets. A lot of them were looking at $7,000 to $9,000 pounds of flower and pitch decks that I was reviewing, you know, not that long ago. So hopefully they've come back down to reality. What are the cannabis subsectors that you're seeing that are still attracting equity capital, or in your opinion, worth looking at?
Distressed. I mean, there's a lot of really...
Is that specific to, like, producers, processor, retailers, or...
No, I think the thing that people are staying the furthest away from is the grow itself. It's crazy, like, how 2.5 years ago or 3 years ago, everybody's like, oh, Jason, come see my grow. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Right. And now it's like, oh no, I have a big grow. That's like a scary thing because, you know, you're just, it's very hard to get the type of price from a grow right now. Like it's just the price per pound. I mean, 300, 400, 200, 800, like that's tough, you know? So really, really challenging in that side. I personally still believe in the tech side. I mean, this industry is going to be massive. There's going to need to be infrastructure to support. I know they're beaten down a little bit and maybe the, you know, valuations got a little ahead of ourselves, but there's some really nice tech players out there that are really supporting the space. And I think you could probably get in there at a little bit better price than a year ago. And for me, PedalFest is that distributor lane and the support of brands into retail is what we believe is extremely valuable. It's obviously my background. I'm a little bit more biased on that lane. But when you say wine and spirits, right, you say Southern Wine and Spirits as the distributor or Breakthrough Beverage or RNDC, right? Those are massive companies. And there's going to be big, big winners in that lane as well. So if you believe in brands, a great way to invest is not necessarily in the individual brand, because you know there's a lot of risk there right now, but that distributor or that, you know, sales agency, whatever you want to call it, reaps the value of the same thing that a distributor would, and those relationships at retail and a brand portfolio. So those are a couple lanes that I'm obviously interested in.
Yeah, I think underrated too. There's a lot of distribution companies that have made companies and other people that are ignorant to the importance of distribution, who put everything else in front and then found themselves without any clients and people purchasing because they didn't invest in that distribution. CBD companies specifically too weren't free from that when they thought they could get into like a little 25 stores of CVS or Rite Aids or Walgreens or whatever, and then realize like no one's buying it because they don't have the marketing and advertising behind it. So even though they did get the distribution, they didn't think it all the way through. So there's
driving velocity, you know, even if you get the distribution, driving velocity is expensive. I don't care what industry you're in. And yeah, to get a consumer to pick up your product versus everybody else's, that's no easy task, right? Mm-hmm. So, I think distribution is a big piece, and there'll be some big winners there. And then what tech companies, what marketing companies can help drive velocity. PedalFest is a little bit of both of those.
Well, if somebody wants to get some more information about PedalFest, where can they find you at? Social media or website?
You can go to pedalfast.com. We, you know, we're not raising money or anything. We're very well capitalized, but certainly brands and partners and anybody that wants to just chat, feel free to go through pedalfast.com, or you can hit me up on LinkedIn. That's really the only platform that I participate in aggressively. If you want to just understand what we do or what I do, and or want some advice, certainly interested. And I wouldn't be where I am if I didn't get a lot of advice and a lot of people didn't help me. So always excited to help folks.
Well, we'll throw your LinkedIn contact in the show notes, and then people can find you through PedalFest website as well. But I think with that, we're going to have to roll this one up. So I want to thank my guest, Jason Bogoski. He's with PedalFest. Jason, thanks again for being with us at The Talking Hedge.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Appreciate it. I'm Josh Kincaid. This is The Talking Hedge. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't, and I'm out. Don't forget to smash that like button on your way out and check out these other videos that we've got.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
I'm Larry Mishkin, and I'd like to invite you to join Rob Hunt and me on our weekly podcast, The Deadhead Cannabis Show. Each week, we explore the latest cannabis and jam band news and reminisce with other deadheads and jam band lovers about the great musical acts that we've seen and heard. Check out a new episode every Monday.